Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Puckin' Pod. I am the former Extreme Joe, your host, joined by...
I'm just going to be Brandon today.
Paul.
So I get to be somebody different this time, and you guys can be just yourselves.
The artist formerly known as Extreme Joe.
The artist formerly known as Extreme Joe. For those of you who don't know, I used to be called Extreme Joe. I was a TV show host on Rogers TV, who, of course, you can see our show on Rogers TV as well. And if you want to check out old episodes, go ahead and look it up on YouTube. We're available. There are some old episodes on YouTube, believe it or not. So the show I used to host is called The Locker Room, and I had a co-host by the name of Holly, and we did a lot of fun stuff. But here we are now doing the Puckin' Pod, and gentlemen, we have a lot to talk about. Over the past couple of weeks here, we've come down to a Stanley Cup champion for the second time.
I am very sad that hockey season is over now. I could go all year round. It wouldn't matter to me.
Here's the thing. Hockey season for me is not yet over, as the Abbotsford Canucks are still in the final for the Calder Cup. And they're currently leading 2-1 in the series. So there's a good chance they could come away with it as long as they win the next two games.
Just not the same as the NHL, my friend.
Well, that's true. I don't disagree with you. I will actually admit I'm quite glad that the NHL hockey season is over, because now all the trades can happen.
That is true.
And they already have started. There's been a couple of trades over the last couple of days specifically, but before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about the final between the Florida Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers. What do you think? How do you think that went? I mean, obviously, Oiler fans are not happy, but...
To me, it went as expected. I was surprised Edmonton won two games, and they almost didn't.
Yeah.
Right? They had to come back in that game. So the second game that they won was when we were recording last week.
That's true,
We were watching the game as it happened, because there was a point where Florida was up 3-0 in that game.
That's right, and they ended up coming back and winning in overtime?
Overtime. So I think the series went as a lot of people expected it to, maybe even better for the Oilers than a lot of people expected to. I know, again, Oilers fans are going to hate to hear that, but... What did we call them last week? Florida's a wagon.
I mean, a wagon is probably a big understatement when you consider what they were able to do. Now, what I heard somebody say was that Edmonton had never led in the series, correct? Like, they'd never been ahead in the series against Florida. Is that right?
As far as scores in the game or, like,
games
wins?
They were always, it was either behind or tied at one point, right?
So that's not true. They led after the first game.
They won the first game. Yeah, you know what? That's true. Right. I didn't think about that. Okay, so they had led once, and but after that game, they hadn't led again. And Florida obviously put their foot on the gas and never let up. So, you know, we look at the victory that they were able to pull off in Florida for Game 6. Did anybody here predict Florida was going to win it in 6 games? I know you said 5.
I said five.
I think I said seven. I can't remember.
I think a lot of people predicted 7. I really do. I think that a lot of people thought that Edmonton was going to put a bigger effort forward than what they were capable of. But I think, as we've been saying all year long, you know, the biggest downside to Edmonton has been goaltending. And you look at what Stuart Skinner was able to do. When we saw that Stuart Skinner was in goal for that final game, a lot of people were like, well, sorry, Edmonton, you know. And sure enough, that's what happened. Not to say it's all Stuart Skinner's fault, but... But, you know, he did let in some soft goals there, and it was a blowout game in the end.
I would, in all honesty, I would put more blame on a guy like Evan Bouchard, who turned over the puck countless times that game and led to 2 goals, some of the turnovers that he did.
Yeah, maybe Darnell Nurse, too, for an equivalent reason.
Yeah.
Half the time, at least, if not more than half the time, Bouchard's body language on the ice looks disinterested. The only time he seems to engage is when he has an opportunity to score or contribute offensively. Other than that, he just looks like he's disengaged to me. And that's not something that you want from what's supposed to be their, with the exception of Ekholm, maybe, their top defenseman.
Well, I think he had like something like 70 points during the regular season this year.
Well, he's good offensively,
yeah,
for sure.
There's no question about that.
But you need to be engaged, man. This is top level.
Especially as a defenseman in the Stanley Cup final, let alone the playoffs. Yeah. But the Stanley Cup final, you need to be the most interested, and you have to be on your game defensively, right? And I mean, that's the big struggle with him. So, you know, Bouchard is an RFA this offseason, and one of the big sort of speculations is, will he be offer sheeted? And he was asked that question in the outgoing press conference. And obviously nobody wants to answer the question of, yeah, of course I'm going to sign an offer sheet. But you know, there's a good chance that somebody's going to give an offer sheet that Edmonton just cannot equal or doesn't want to equal, and maybe they'll cash in with a draft pick or two. So
both of those teams are going to have crazy off seasons. Crazy off seasons. Yeah. I mean, if someone's going to offer sheet Bouchard, let's say that they do, even if they don't, what's Edmonton going to offer him? He's going to need a big pay raise.
Yeah.
I know the cap's going up, but is there going to be flexibility there? Like
looking at a Broberg and Holloway situation again, really, when you think about that.
Yeah, so, yeah. They're going to price him out of it.
But, you know, there could be an exodus of players that are going to be leaving the team, obviously, this year. Like it's, like I said, you said the possibility of a qualifying or
offer sheet.
Offer sheet, thank you. offer sheet for Evan Bouchard. You know, there could be guys like Corey Perry that are going, Connor Brown, who is on there at the bottom. Jeff Skinner, I think, is definitely gone. He got scratched so many times this year. Kasperi Kapanen, you know, they got spots opening up, and cap space opening up. So hopefully, you know, they can fill it in at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
Trent Frederick got a really hefty raise.
Yeah, $4 million a year, or just shy of $4 million a year, but it's 8 years.
8 years.
So they've got Trent Frederick on their team. He's going to be playing the bottom six for 8 years in Edmonton, and there's nothing wrong with that. He's not the worst player, but you know, that's a lot of money to pay for somebody in the bottom six for sure.
It's a lot.
Yeah,
his career high in points is 40.
Yeah,
one time.
Yeah,
yeah. His next career high is 31.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, you get what you pay for. Hopefully you get what you pay for in this case. But yeah, you know, then you look at these players, like you say, you know, I think of Corey Perry. Is he the kind of player, and maybe this is me being facetious and funny, but is he the kind of player that you want on your team? The guy has lost five Stanley Cups in the last 6 years.
But why do people want him on their team for playoff runs?
Because he's nasty and he's nasty. Dirty.
He produces.
And he gets in people's faces. He produces and he's hard-nosed.
40 years old.
And he's hard-nosed, yeah.
Think of the statement you just made. He's been to five.
He has been to five, yeah, exactly, yeah. So he's doing something right except winning.
There's probably nobody that feels worse about it than him. Yeah. Really? Oh, man,
yeah, I can't imagine.
But he always has a job, and he came right after and said, I'm not done.
Yeah.
And he's 40.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's good for him, I guess. The guy's a dick. But good for him, you know, he's going to keep on keeping on.
I always have to bleep that out whenever you say that, by the way.
Why? Why can't I say that word?
I don't think you're allowed to say that word on really? Rogers TV.
Rogers TV?
Like a commercial. And it's really an interesting talking point when you consider Corey Perry has been to, like you said, you know, five Stanley Cup finals in the last 6 years and has yet to win one. He won once in his career with Anaheim, but you know, those losses almost way heavier, don't you think?
I'm pretty sure that was like back in 2007? 2006, 2007, yep. I think. A while ago.
Yeah. Maybe 5, maybe 05, 06, I can't remember.
I think it was the year after.
04, 05 was the year Calgary went to against Tampa, right?
03, 04 was Calgary.
Right.
Lockout.
Right.
And then Carolina won it after the lockout.
Yeah, that was against Edmonton. That's right. So then it was.
And then I think it was Anaheim.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy times, man.
As we were talking about the Oilers in that series and kind of what we expected, it's interesting that I was reading an article, credit to Justin Bourne, and he basically was like, technically, that was one of the most lopsided six-game series in Stanley Cup final history. There's a stat here that he put out. Edmonton led in that series. Any guess as to what percentage of the series?
You're talking about score.
Score.
I'll say 11%.
Percentage?
Percentage.
Yeah, I would say like 10 or less.
8.
Yeah.
8% of the series
It was definitely obvious that it was Florida's cup to win, really. You know, and I think in the end you could see that Edmonton was in an uphill battle. The fact that they were able to win a game, or, you know, come close to winning more than a game, like, says something about Edmonton more than anything. But I think also it says that maybe Florida let their foot off the gas a little bit. You know, the way they won in the end clearly shows that they were the better team.
Well, you know, pat in the back to the Leafs. They were the only team to take Florida to seven games, even though they had the blowout loss in Game 7. They were the only team
game
of the whole
five
playoffs.
Game 5, too, really?
Yeah, they had two blowouts. That's right, yeah, 5 and 7. Yeah.
So
That style of play that Florida plays and has been playing, is there a team in this playoffs that was even close to matching even the style. I'm not talking about the intensity and the ferociousness of what they did and their execution of it, but exactly that style. As I mentioned on the episode last week about how on a line change play, there were still three Florida Panthers that essentially were involved in a forecheck situation.
That's right.
On a line change.
Yeah, they stuck to a structure. And they played that way all year long. It wasn't just the playoffs. It's literally they played the same throughout the whole season.
That's the key right there.
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
And they stuck to it.
And Paul Maurice said that too.
Yeah.
He said, we played the exact same way as the first day of training camp as we did game six of the Stanley Cup final.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
That's how you win.
That is how you win. You stick to it. That's right.
I know that I mentioned, obviously, early on in the playoffs that it was Rantanen's playoffs. You kind of have to almost think the way that this ended up, this was Marchand's playoffs. So he was pretty important to their win.
Oh, 100%. And he played well. He, you know, this is probably, and I mean, maybe I'm shooting myself in the foot here by saying this, but this is probably the first season for me being a Canuck fan where I didn't hate Marchand.
Yeah.
I subtly was rooting for him a little bit because of just the way he was poorly treated in Boston towards the end, right?
Yes.
He has been underpaid his entire career. I was listening to a podcast today, and they were saying that when he got a raise, I believe it was after the World Cup in 2016, and they signed him to $6.8 million extension times 8 years or whatever. I think it was 8 years.
Yeah.
And then it was basically then where he kind of just shot out like a cannon, right? And he went from a 40 to 50-point player to an 80 to 100-point player consistently.
Yeah.
He was in the Art Ross race 3 seasons ago.
Yeah, I think he had votes for Selke this year. He had votes for
Selke.
Yeah, I mean,
never for the Lady Bing, I bet.
No, never. But you know, he had votes for things like, you know, most hardworking player and things like that, right? And those are things you look for. And the guy is also in his late 30s, like he's getting up there. In fact, I think he's 40.
Just turned 37.
37.
Okay. Just turned 37.
So he's getting there. He's getting there. But you know,
than me.
He's not a young man. But you know, there's a lot of speculation. Of course, a lot of Leaf fans are saying he's going to sign with the Leafs.
They're
being
that
he's Canadian. But yeah, and the Leaf fans will say a lot of things. But I think, you know, after listening to the interviews and stuff on the ice when they were lifting the cup, how much he meant to that team in Florida, that it really seems to me like he's probably either going to re-sign in Florida or he'll end up back in Boston. I'm thinking Florida. He's going to stick with it. And
Sam Bennett's interview, that's all he said.
That's all he said.
That's all he said. Basically, the whole interview was, we followed Brad Marchand. The minute he came into that locker room, it was Brad Marchand's team.
Yeah.
And we followed him, the way his work ethic, the way he trained, the way he conducted himself.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that Brad Marchand did, we followed because he's the guy that set an example for the rest of us.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, the guy's a dick on the ice, but outside of the rink, he is probably one of the most renowned and well-liked ambassadors for hockey that there can be.
Yeah,
with all the work that he does,
he does a lot of the right things.
Him and his wife both, they contribute so much to the community. At least they were in Boston. And then, you know, I'm sure wherever they end up now, it'll be the same, right?
Yeah.
So there, as much as we can hate him, and we've both, I mean, you as a Canucks fan have your own reasons for hating Brad Marchand. I think we all know what that is. But as a Leafs fan, they're in the same division and have been for however many years since the Leafs went into the Atlantic Division. And they've been rivals and faced in the playoffs 4 out of the last 8 seasons.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, you know, you have your own hate for him, too. Everybody hates Brad Marchand.
Well, and you played against him this year, too.
That's right.
You know, so.
And then you see the player that he was, all that background stuff with the Four Nations.
Yeah.
And you could see that he's well-liked in the room.
Oh, totally.
Whether as soon as that switch gets turned on when he hits the ice, right? That rat mentality or whatever you want to do. As I said a few episodes ago, there was a point where him and Scott Laughton were arguing in that series.
Mm.
From the time the whistle was blown until the time they got back to the bench, how much do you literally have to say in 45 seconds to someone and screaming the entire time? He just doesn't stop.
Yeah.
But as soon as he leaves the ice, switch goes off. He's a dad again. You know, he's a community ambassador. He probably contributes millions to the children's hospital. Who knows, right? Like, it's just, it sounds like that's the type of person he is. That's why he's sought after.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's got maybe like dissociative personality disorder or something. You know, he's just.
To be fair, I think a lot of hockey players. Hockey players have that problem, right? Like, they're able to just flick a switch and become. And I mean, I think it's sports in general, because I know there are football players who have the same mentality. I was literally watching an interview on there's a guy named Christian Covington who plays for the BC Lions. His dad played for the, I want to say the Blue Bombers. And his dad was like the sweetest guy off the field. Everyone loved him. But the moment he got on the field, he just destroyed people. That's literally what he made a living doing, like tackling and just destroying people. But off the field, he's the sweetest guy, the most, like, he's like Santa Claus, you know? And it's just so funny how they can flick that switch. But that's sports for you. You start competing and you know, competition does that to you. Yeah, and a good example might be something like that F1 movie that's coming out, where you get the side of a driver where he, you know, he's human outside of the car, and then the moment he gets in that car, he's like somebody completely different.
What do you think of the cup handoff? Now, initially, I would have thought Marshawn would have been the first person to actually get the cup handed to him, but they had a process of what they wanted to do. Did you follow it all after?
Do you believe that they actually talk about it?
Yes.
Beforehand?
Yes. Yeah? They 100% did. They said that they did.
Oh, did they?
Yep. Huh. Barkov came right out during his on-ice interview, and they asked him that question. And they were basically like, you know, how did you guys decide who was going to get a cup? And he said, to be honest, a lot of us have been here before.
Yeah.
Like the guys that were on the team last year, and even Marchand won in 2011, right? Mm-hmm. Sorry, Joe. so he'd been there before.
That was his rookie season, by the way.
Was it his rookie season? Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah.
So he'd been there before, too. He'd been to the dance. And they wanted it to go in a process where they wanted everybody on the team who had not won the Stanley Cup before.
That's true. I noticed that, actually. I remember saying that to Faye when we were watching. I was like, oh, yeah, they're giving the cup to everybody who hasn't won a cup, because you could tell based on the players who were lifting the cup. So
who got it first?
It was I can give the whole list here. So it was Nate Schmidt who Barkov handed it off to.
That's what I thought.
Former Vancouver Canuck Nate Schmidt. There's a couple of former Vancouver Canucks on this team that raised the cup. And actually, Jonah Gadjevich, who was also a former Vancouver Canuck, raised it last year as well. So.
Yeah.
Went to Seth Jones next. Jones handed it off to Thomas Noshek. Noshek handed it off to fellow Czech, Vitek Vanacek.
Oh, the goalie, yeah.
Yeah. Then to AJ Greer.
He was their third string, wasn't he?
No, he was the backup.
He played backup.
The third stringer did get the cup. He got the cup as well.
Yeah, that's right.
It went to AJ Greer, then to Jesper Boqvist, Maki Samoskovic, Juvis Belinskis, Jacob Megna, and then it went to the third stringer.
Megna, also a former Vancouver Canadian.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Then it went to the third stringer, Evan Cormier.
By the way, props on pronouncing all those names, by the way. I just, I know you have a struggle sometimes. And that was pretty good. That was pretty good.
Not easy.
I know.
So now, post Stanley Cup final, this kind of took me for a loop a little bit. Now, I don't disagree with what I'm about to say, but what I do disagree with is that why it's not evened up a little bit. And my point being is that there's a report right now that the Oilers are being now investigated for the possible potential cap circumvention with Evander Kane specifically. So if they're going to talk about the reinstating of Evander Kane and the timing of it, why would it be any different than, say, a Matthew Tkachuk?
That's right. Yeah.
So that part blows me away a little bit. If you're going to investigate, then do a full investigation.
Yeah, investigate everybody.
Why are
they
singling out the Edmonton Oilers in this situation? I haven't really heard that much about it or have an idea of where it's going to go. I'm sure in the coming weeks we'll know.
If the NHL is smart, they'll eventually say, we're good, you know, and we'll just leave it at this. But next year, watch your backs. because honestly, all of a sudden, you know, you were able to do it for years and years and years and years, and then all of a sudden a Canadian team might be called for it, and it's now speculative, and it just feels like Gary Bettman is once again doing his thing. And I mean, this is all conspiracy, but like, you know, it's so fishy.
It does make you think, unfortunately. You know, Bettman came into the league as commissioner in 1995, and the last time a Canadian team did win was, you know, 92-93, so yeah. I'm not going to place the blame on him, but it does feel at times that there is favoritism for the places that he wants to build the game. So it's, you know, it's,
yeah.
I don't know.
If something comes out of this investigation, that's got to be like the ultimate last blow to Oilers fans,
like,
right?
What's going to happen? So hypothetically, what would a punishment look like? Would it be
draft pick forfeit?
Yeah, so you forfeit your first overall, your first round draft pick, basically.
It depends on the severity, I think, of how they determine what went down.
Yeah,
it could be multiple draft picks. So
that's ugly, man. That's
it's ugly for sure. It's very, very ugly, and I don't know. There's something you're right about. That's a good word to say. There's something fishy about it. Like I say, I don't have a problem with the investigation, but look at all the other, like, and it wasn't even just Edmonton and it wasn't just Florida either.
Yeah.
Right?
And honestly, like this is something they should have been doing while Edmonton was playing in the, and I understand they're probably saying like, oh, we don't want to distract them and stuff. But like, if this is an issue now, then that means it was an issue in round
one. That's right. Rules are rules.
Make that investigation happen while it's happening so that this isn't coming as a surprise to Oilers fans or Canadian hockey fans in general. You know, if you ask us, if it's not for Canadian hockey fans, the NHL is not making the money it's making, obviously, because there's some major, you know, fan bases in Canada. So it's scary stuff. And I, you know, hopefully, I know I did hear this year that they were going to be looking at the rule change for next year in terms of creating some sort of cap for the playoffs or something like that, so that teams can't just, you know, slide in a player who is quote unquote hurt during the regular season just so they can play in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But I think that there has to be some sort of exception to the rule as well.
Well, you know, thinking of the Oilers in regards to, you know, like this possibly happening with Evander Kane, you have to wonder what next year is going to look like. Obviously, McDavid can sign an extension July 1st, but his like most recent comments makes you wonder whether he's wanting to stay or not. He's saying that these last two cup runs have been, you know, hard on his family. It's been kind of put through the ringer, and he feels that winning is important. Now, you know, the Edmonton Oilers have made the last two Stanley Cup finals, but they haven't gone over the top. And if he is, as he's saying, like it's affecting his family, he's a family man. Does he say, hey, I'm not going to sign until the end of the year, and then leave bygones be bygones next summer?
I would argue this season too, they were actually not as good as they were last year.
I think so too.
I mean, obviously that they went to seven games last year, but just in terms of like the probability of them winning, felt like they had a better chance last year than this year for sure.
To that point, Paul, do you have any idea or do you have a theory at all of what he's talking about when he says that? Like, this was hard on my family. Why is it hard on your family? Because you lost or because you're away from them? Or because like what is he alluding to when he says that?
I couldn't get into his head. Like, he talked about one of his quotes that there's emotional highs and lows, and that those runs have had a hard time on his family. It's hard on them, just like it is the fans. He was saying he's basically just wondering if it's worth it. If maybe, from what I'm gathering, is that whether maybe a change of scenery is something that he needs to look at in the future, because he's finding that. I guess the culture isn't enough for him in Edmonton because they haven't been able to pull it through yet.
It's crazy to think about. I can't imagine the Oilers without McDavid.
Yeah, you know, me neither.
Honestly, it would destroy the fan base. Like, the fan base would be just torn apart. And, you know, they've got Draisaitl, don't get me wrong, but Draisaitl is not McDavid. And, you know, it would be tough for them to be able to handle having a McDavid-less Oilers team.
Would it be like the same, again, because we're Leafs fans, would it be kind of the same kind of exodus, burning the sweater kind of situation if McDavid did leave next summer to sign with the Leafs?
Probably. Yeah, probably. Like, when you think of what the New York Islanders fans and how they treated John Tavares when he left, I think this would be 100 times worse than that. I'm with you. I think I kind of warmed up to the fact of seeing Marchand in a Florida jersey. And I thought that was going to be really strange. And I mean, there's lots of examples over the years, but recency bias, I cannot see McDavid anywhere else.
And I'm not comparing McDavid to Marner in this scenario, but You know, I know that a lot of fans are pissed off at Marner for everything he didn't do this season in terms of waiving his no-trade clause and blah, blah, blah. And there's a lot of speculation he's going to get booed when he plays against the Leafs this year.
There's so much more than just him not waiving his no-trade, though. It's the lead-up. It was the last contract negotiation. Like, he's kind of... It seems, and I don't really want to get into it because we've got plenty of time to do that.
Yes.
But it just seems like he had made up his mind a while ago about what's going to happen. Now, we don't know for sure. He could still resign, but all indication is pointing that he's done,
he's
right?
Done, yeah.
And back to McDavid and that interview that you were talking about, because I watched it as well. When that question was asked of him, his body language changed completely.
Yeah.
He went from praising the team and loving his guys and how, you know, they're in a war together and it's a battle and back-to-back Stanley Cup finals and, you know, we haven't gotten there. And then it's, you know, well, what does your future look like in Edmonton? And he's kind of like, well, at the end of the day, I have to look out for myself and my family. And you're like, what? What just happened?
Yeah. I don't want to play devil's advocate, but I'm going to say this, that with McDavid too, keep in mind they did just finish playing.
Of course.
And he's still got to, you know, kind of process what happened and figure out in his mind what works for him. I think there's a lot of love for Edmonton and the fans for McDavid and on McDavid's side of things. I also think that he, like he said, like you said, I think he's got to figure out to himself, what is my best avenue to actually winning a cup? Because that's his dream. That's his dream. Let's not forget the fact that every player in the NHL wants to win a Stanley Cup. And so in his mind, he has 31 other teams that he could go to try to pursue that cup if he thinks that that's going to be the best odd for him to win. Yeah. Now, this is next year we're talking about.
Yep.
He still has a whole season to burn before that decision comes. But, you know, you got to think, too, Edmonton is going to do whatever they can to try and re-sign him next year.
Well, you got to look at a great example of a player that wanted to pursue a championship and left his hometown to do so would be LeBron James. You know, he knew that he had reached his limit, unfortunately, with Cleveland. Cleveland was his hometown.
To be fair, he did win a championship in Cleveland.
He did, but after he won two championships with the Miami Heat.
With Miami.
He saw the writing on the wall with the Heat, and he's like, I'm going to that team.
And that broke the hearts of Cleveland fans, because, of course, this is their hometown kid.
Yep.
There's no way he's going to leave his hometown, but, of course, he's going to take the avenue toward winning a championship. And I think any player in any league would do the same thing if it meant winning a championship. The cool thing with LeBron is he won the championships in Miami and then came back to Cleveland to try and win the championship.
I think it was the Golden State Warriors and the Cavaliers made it to like three or four straight finals together. And that was funny enough, the year that they beat the Golden State Warriors, the Golden State Warriors had won 72 regular season games, the highest ever in NBA history.
Yeah,
because there's only 80 games in an NBA season, right?
82. No,
it's is there 82?
Same as NHL.
Okay.
Just to kind of finish up with McDavid, the thing about him is that Edmonton, I hate doing this, but it's really easy to do. You look at Marner in Toronto, and the writing's been on the wall for a while, right?
Yep.
You look at McDavid in Edmonton, there hasn't been an instance where that city hasn't absolutely worshipped this guy. They've given him the key to the city, right? Now, on the other side of things, he's 28 years old. He's not even halfway through his career yet either.
Yeah.
So he's got, like, this next year is going to be...
He could have another 10 seasons.
At least
10 seasons.
I would say 12 to 15, possibly, the way he plays.
I think injury would play a part, for
sure. That's right. Yeah. Who knows what could happen.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're talking about a guy who, like I said, is worshipped by the city, the fans, probably most of the province. Because, realistically, Calgary's in the south, and then you've got the entire rest of Alberta behind him. And it's just, this guy's, it doesn't matter who he plays with. He always seems to be able to bring everybody along with him. And there aren't many players like that in the NHL, right? So this guy really has the pick of the litter.
That's what I'm saying.
And
he has 31 other teams to choose from to go and play for if he decides that that's the best option for him. And, you know, I know that Oilers fans will be disappointed. They'll be really upset. They'll probably boo him and all that kind of stuff. But this guy is the next Wayne Gretzky, you know, when you consider the abilities that he has that no other player in the league has.
Yeah.
you know.
Now we're
can't blame him.
We're talking like he's leaving, and I guess his comments make you feel that there's the possibility that there's still every single possibility that he'll re-sign. But you know, when you lose, especially back-to-back Stanley Cup championships, when you lose back-to-back twice, that kind of does leave a bit of a stain on you, I'm pretty sure. So it's one of those things where, while there's still that possibility that he'll sign, it's I wouldn't be surprised that this really left a bad mark for him.
Now, that being said, again, going back to what I said before, he does still have another year on his contract. Edmonton can do whatever they want with that with that year. They can try to make the team better again and bring him all the way back to the Stanley Cup final again. You just never know what Bowman's capable of. The number one thing I would suggest is get a good goaltender. Get a really good goaltender.
You really need a good goaltender.
And then maybe you know, beef up that defense a little bit. But you just never know. You just never know.
They've already dispersed their head scout to pretty much every penitentiary in Canada. So trying to find whoever they can.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Hot take. Yes guy or no guy. This is potentially the most crucial offseason in the NHL in general in like the past 10 years.
It feels like it. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yes, guy. to me, it feels like every team seems to be kind of their make or break season, off season, except Pittsburgh, from what I understand. Pittsburgh is definitely kind of
playing it a little more safe.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate when you consider, you know, Crosby has a season or two left in his contract, and that's it, right? Yeah. And he's pretty much done. Yeah. I don't know. I think he's got three more seasons. I think. Or two.
Because he just signed an extension.
I thought it was like a 3-year extension or something. Yeah. Anyway, either way, you don't want Crosby to be sitting there with a crap team, especially him and Malkin together. You know, when you have a crap team, you want to do something to get these guys at least attempt to another championship, or at least trade them to a team that has a chance to win. You know, there's a few teams out there could use a player like Crosby and Malkin. So
they thought they found their Messiah GM in Dubas. I guess it's more like Methuselah.
What do you think, Paul? Do you think this is a pretty crucial offseason?
Considering the players that could be available and like star players that could be changing sides, the fact that it was McDavid's last year, I'd say there's already changes starting to happen. Like we were going to start talking about trades, we likely could probably just start getting into that. You know,
let's get into it.
I just want to make one last point, and that what I'll say about this offseason for me is that I think, like, for being a fan of my team, I really guess it doesn't matter if other teams overspend.
Yeah.
But at the same time, as a hockey fan, seeing the cap jump up as much as it is, and at a time where it really hasn't, who is going to overplay their hand? And it's probably going to be a lot of teams.
Yeah, and actually, I think that this coming trade deadline will be a really interesting one in terms of the availability of cap room that people are going to have. So you start seeing some really interesting trades where big money's being handed back and forth. It's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to it.
We got to do another live because that was the most fun.
Yeah, totally.
Totally was.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway.
That's a long day.
That's a long day. It is. And that's a long way away.
Yeah.
So there was one kind of pretty decent trade made today, and it's a player that I actually wanted to see traded to the Leafs.
And you wanted to the Mammoth.
To the Mammoth. Mason Marchment got sent to the Seattle Kraken from the Dallas Stars for Dallas's 2025 fourth-round pick, and the Kraken's third-round pick in 2026.
Yeah, so the Kraken sends away a third-round pick in 2026 and a fourth-round pick in 2025. That's a pretty cheap price to pay when you consider a player like Marchman. Yeah. He's basically like, he's not going to get you a ton of points, but he's gonna you know, be a hard-nosed player, and he's going to be a really good sort of two-way player as well, and he's a good playmaker as well.
Yeah, he's kind of like a half Kachuk. You know, he's got the unicorn grittiness.
That's a good analogy. Actually.
Some offense potential, just not nearly as much.
Now, which Kachuk are we talking about?
Matthew.
Keith Kachuk.
Could be Brady. Keith Kachuk.
I also just saw today, not a trade, but a signing. I think people are already overpaid. Like, the Senators re-signed Fabian Zetterlund today.
Oh, okay.
3-year contract extension worth $4.275 million per season.
Yeah.
Well,
that to me reminds me of the Frederick signing in Edmonton.
Yep.
You know,
yep,
with thing. That kind of money, except yep. it's 8 years well, for him.
They got Brock Nelson making $7.5 million in yeah. Colorado, yeah. like, yep. you know, stuff like that. Ryan Donato probably got slightly, in most people's opinion, overpaid. He had a great year, but, you know, 4 years, $4 million per year for that contract. That's a lot for a guy that probably would have been a third winger on a lot of other teams, or third liner on a lot of other teams.
Very true.
I think Chicago is probably at the point now where they're going to start being aggressive again.
They need to.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and they've got all the cap room in the world too, right? Yeah. Like them and Anaheim are going to be just buying players up, you know. And it's going to be really interesting to see what kind of happens with those two teams, because it's going to affect a lot of other teams who are going after certain players, right? Yeah. If players are looking for money, those are the two places they're going to go.
And Chicago has lots of draft capital too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And obviously, Seattle had some draft capital there too. So, mm-hmm. yep.
Matt Duchene also signed for 4 years today at $4.5 million.
Oh, my God.
To be fair, I think that's a reasonable amount for Duchene. However, I think the four-year thing is a little tricky because he's getting up there, right?
Yeah.
How old is he?
34.
He'll be 34. He's not that old, actually.
Well, I think he's turning 35 this year. Okay. So he'll be 39, so 39 by the time he'll be almost 40. Contract's over.
Okay.
The Dallas Stars signed him today. They have 18 players under contract.
Yeah.
How many players are on a roster at a time? 23.
Yeah, 23.
You know how much cap space they have?
I was going to say, how much cap space?
$54,000.
Yeah.
And they need to sign five players.
So that explains the Marchment move, obviously. That had to happen.
Yeah.
What did that free up cap space-wise for them?
4.25, I think.
Yeah, it's 4.25.
Might have been 4.5.
They'll probably make another move or two just to free up some more cap space so they can sign some other players.
They're not going to have a choice.
Yeah. I mean, unless they can make a decent hockey trade, it'll be interesting to see. I really think Jason Robertson's on his way out the door. There's been a lot of speculation that that he wants to be traded out of Dallas. So
I wonder why.
It just very well could feel like to him, especially considering what kind of cap space they have, that he thinks that they're not going to have a decent team next year to do anything. And he's not entirely wrong.
He's under contract, is he not? I actually don't know the answer.
Jason Robertson, yeah. He's got 7.75 next year, and then he's an RFA.
An RFA, okay.
Mason Marchand was 4.5, by the way.
Maybe he's worried 4.5. That Dallas won't have enough to give him a raise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now's his opportunity with the cap going up that there will be a team that'll pay him more. So
is he a winger or does he play center?
He's a wing.
Winger, okay. Yeah.
Left winger, I think.
Okay, so I won't expect him in Vancouver.
Well, taking consideration, too, the part of the reason what's going on with this is the fact that Rantanen's extension's kicking in. Like, he was, I believe, at half retained, something like $2.6 million, and then now he's going to be jumping up to a $12 million contract, so that's $10 million that's going to add to the books.
12 times there. 8, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
$10 million more basically that's going to add to the books. Same with Ottinger. He's going from $4 million per year to $8.25 million. So, you know, it's cap gymnastics.
I was having an argument in the car today with my wife about the NHL, and it's not wasn't an argument per se, but it was like she believes that the NHL should just get rid of the cap. She's like, this cap stuff is ridiculous. Because I was like, well, players should basically try to take a cut if they're trying to win a cup. Like, I think of McDavid, for example. If McDavid wants to be on a cup-winning team, especially like Edmonton, if he wanted to win in Edmonton, take less money so that they can use that extra money and build up their team to like what, you know, I think about what Crosby did in Pittsburgh. Same exact thing. Do something like that. If you're going to ask for the most money, then your team is going to be handcuffed in terms of being able to make their team better. Now, her argument is players should go for the money, get what they think they're worth. Teams should be able to pay them that money and then do whatever the hell else they want to make their team better.
Yeah.
Like back in the day when you know, New York and Toronto were just buying up players, right? Because they had the money to do it.
They don't care about the cash.
Exactly. And honestly, I tend to agree with her when it comes down to it. It's like, yeah, man, if you want to win a cup, fork out the money, man. Go broke and get these players to join your team.
And I think we all know the reason that doesn't happen is because there are 32 teams in the NHL, 20 of them
wouldn't be able
to
do it.
They can't afford, exactly. They don't have, the market's not there, yeah, right? Yeah. They're still good teams, they still make money, but it's not like the fall off between the top 10 teams and then beyond is ridiculous.
It's tough, you know, and it's
the
same, always...
like, the prime example would be the Yankees of the 2000s.
Yeah. Right. And there's always going to be speculation one way or the other in terms of, like, you know, we talk about Gary Bettman having a hate on Canada. You know, obviously we're sort of being facetious. We're like half being facetious, in that he's got a hate on for Canada, and that, you know, these investigations on Edmonton are just, you know, nonsense when he's not investigating the American teams. And then we argue about the whole no tax thing in Florida versus what it is in Canada, and that you know, Floridian teams have won the cup now for like six straight years or something like that. It's just like bizarre.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think at the same time, you know, and Bettman does have a point. There was a point where the Florida Panthers were one of the worst teams in the league and couldn't get better. And they didn't make the playoffs for years, 4 years. And then finally they got better, you know, and that's what happens to everybody.
Then the economy went to crap and no taxes saved them.
But I just feel like, you know, there's going to be a team. There's going to eventually be a Canadian team that figures it out and figures out how to win. And we're going to be like, and of course this league, and this is a statement that's been said by many, you know, many GMs and coaches, that this is a mimicry league, right? Our copycat league is the term they use. This is a copycat league. We, you know, one team wins and everybody has to follow what that team did to try and win as well. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I think there's going to be eventually a point where a Canadian team figures it out and wins, and everyone goes, wow, nobody saw that coming, and it's going to be wonderful.
Yeah.
I just hope it's my team.
Since our last podcast, there's been two other trades that have been done. Eric Holla was acquired by the Nashville Predators for AHLer Jeremy Hansel and a fourth round pick, as well as Victor Soderstrom was acquired from the Chicago Blackhawks by the Boston Bruins for also AHLer Ryan Mast and a 2025 seventh round pick.
The Holla trade is interesting because he used to play for Nashville, so he got traded back to Nashville. So it's kind of interesting that Nashville sort of still sees, you know, value in that player. It kind of makes you wonder what they're doing, because it felt like they were kind of selling the farm at the end of the season there, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Well, they had a very underwhelming season for sure.
Yeah. Really surprising.
Yeah.
Really surprising. But it is what it is. And the Soderstrom thing, it's kind of just a minor deal kind of thing when you consider it. But Soderstrom does have some promise to him. I mean, he's still a young player.
So. Well, he was a first round pick.
Yeah.
You know, I just couldn't figure it out in Utah, but Arizona, obviously, was the ones that drafted him.
Hall is another one of those players that seems to be well renowned throughout the league. It's just one of those guys you got to have on your team.
Hard nose. Yeah.
Good plays the game the right way. Leader in the room. Just
absolutely.
There's not enough of them around. We all need those players on our teams, and you're lucky if you get one, maybe two.
Well, you had to wonder, like Nashville, like they really need to turn around next year compared to what this year was. Yeah. That was surprising.
Is that Trotz's inexperience as a GM?
I don't necessarily believe it's Trotz's fault. I think I more than anything,
at all.
I mean,
curious. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
And I think really more than when it comes down to it, it's like we looked at that team on paper last, you know, before the season started. When we were doing this pod, we were saying Nashville's going to be a good team.
Yep.
We said Colorado was going to be a good team. We said all these things, right? And we were right about Colorado for the most part, but Nashville really surprised us.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the report about Roman Josi yesterday?
No, I don't think I did.
So I wonder if I can find it real quick. I saw a headline. He's got potential health serious problems.
That's right.
Problems.
I did see that. That's right. I was reading
something tachycardia he's been diagnosed with, really? Which is the heart. That's no good.
Yeah, that's tough, man. He's one of the best defensemen in the league.
Postural or orthostatic tachycardia syndrome.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Please don't ask me what that is.
I was going to say, what do you think that is? Well, I mean, cardio in the name obviously means heart, so there's definitely something there, but geez. Hopefully it's not serious and that's something he can still play, but, you know.
There was a report saying that he'll still go to training camp, the whole work, so it's probably something he has to monitor, probably has to take medication for.
Maybe it's literally another name for like a heart murmur or something like that.
But it basically, in layman's terms, the short acronym for it is POTS, and it says it causes one's heart rate to spike abnormally when transitioning from sitting to lying down to standing up.
You know, I think Faye has that problem, my wife. She every once in a while, she'll be sitting down and she'll be like, my heart's just racing, you know?
This is interesting. It literally says right after that, according to the Cleveland Clinic, it almost always affects women from ages 15 to 50.
There you go. Yeah.
But in rare cases, it can affect some men.
Yeah.
That's the generalization of it.
Hmm.
That's weird.
Very weird, yeah. Obviously something they have to monitor. But, you know, I mean, he's still one of the best defensemen in the league. He's a player I'd love to have on my team, that's for sure. Imagine him alongside Quinn Hughes.
And they're saying that he'll be treated with therapy and beta blockers, so yeah. Pills.
Yeah, so he's able to manage it. Hmm. Well, gentlemen, I think we should talk a little bit about Major League Baseball. You know, we talk a lot about hockey. I mean, obviously, all the stuff came down to an end recently. We got through all of our trades and stuff that have happened recently and signings. Let's talk a little bit about baseball. Well, how are the Blue Jays doing so far? I mean, last we talked, the Blue Jays were kicking butt.
It's still kicking butt. They just had a series against the Phillies. Now, they swept the Phillies like 2 weeks ago. And then this most recent series, they actually got swept by the Phillies.
Ah.
So basically, you know, eye for an eye when it comes to that. Otherwise, though, yeah, they're still on a roll.
114 out of 19.
Yep.
Right now. They've got some injuries.
Well,
too.
Yeah, they're doing this with only really three starters. Bowden Francis just went on the IR, has been struggling through his starts, and then the fifth starter has been a mishmash of relievers, you know, filling in during that time. Scherzer, they're saying, is possibly back within the next week here just because he's had another another game down in the minors that's gone really well for him. So him coming back soon will be huge.
That'll be big, yeah.
Yeah, like I said, even with the injuries that they're dealing with, awesome to watch right now.
Cool. What that's allowing, which is nice to see for a change because you don't see it often with the GAs, is that some of these players that they've been developing are starting to produce. Addison Barger being the big one. A guy has an absolute cannon of an arm because his arms are bigger than my thighs. And at the plate, a left-handed power bat. And he's one of those guys where it becomes infectious and contagious. He plays the game so hard. There was a game last week that he was playing on a line drive to right center. And he basically shot out of the batter's box like he was going to try to get an inside the park home run.
Wow.
And he ended up getting a double out of it when it really should have been a single.
Wow.
And just because he just out of the box ran as hard as he could first and managed to get in, slide into second.
That's cool.
And they said after the game, there was a couple of players that were like, well, you see a player playing hard like that and you all want to play the same way.
Absolutely.
And that's something I think has been lacking a bit over the years.
Yeah.
With this team, you know, that sort of country club mentality with the Jays a little bit. And it's been scrutinized. And then you see a player like that who's a young guy trying to make his way in the MLB. That's how you do it. That's how you get noticed, right?
Yeah.
So they've got some serious injuries still dealing with. Dalton Varsho, I think, is close again. But, yep. I mean, he came back and played, what, four games and last time he was injured?
Yeah.
So he's been kind of a Band-Aid all year. As you alluded to, starting pitching, the rotation's kind of hurt right now. Jimenez, I don't think he's 100%. Santander is still not playing. But, again, who cares if he plays? He's not making a difference anyway. Where did, you know, they're paying him $19 million to do nothing. But and Vladdy. He is coming. Coming hard.
That's good. I mean, I know
he's like 7-for-9 in his last two games.
That's awesome. I know we were talking before, literally a couple episodes ago, where we were talking about how he hasn't been turning it on, and we were worried about it considering the amount of money he's making. And
And what did we say? He's traditionally a slow starter.
He's a slow starter.
And he's jumped his batting average up like 35 points in a week and a half, two weeks. So I think he's hitting .288 right now.
He always sort of seems to me like the type of player who thrives on playing well. Like, what I mean by that is, like, the energy from the crowd when he plays well, like, he thrives on that.
Yes.
And I love that. I love players that are like that because it really, you can tell that they're like, it's almost like they could play better even if the crowd gets even more into it, right? So playoffs would be a huge deal.
Yeah. I gotta say, I am stoked. I found out 2 days ago that late September, the 25th, I think, I get to fly out to Toronto for work. And as part of the experience, they're going to take us to a Blue Jays game at the Rogers Centre. It's against the Red Sox, which I'm pumped for.
Very cool.
What's even cooler than that, though, and I mean, it's still, we're a long way away from it, but it's the second to last series of the season before playoffs. And with the race that they're in right now in the American League East, that could have serious playoff implications because the Jays, the Rays, and the Red Sox are all on heaters right now.
The Jays, the Rays, and the Bays. They're all going after it.
But I hope the Sox team I see at Rogers Center this time will be better than the last one. I watched the Jays play the White Sox in 2017. It was 7-0 White Sox after the first inning.
Oh, boy.
So Kendrys Morales was the only person in that game that scored any runs for the Jays. It was a solo home run. The final score was 9-1. It was a nasty game. Good thing the beer was free.
I was going to say.
Because it was not a fun game to be at. I've actually still got the ticket stub. It's framed on my wall.
That's awesome.
But hopefully this time it'll be a little bit more exciting and more fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be fun.
I can't wait.
Be interesting to see what happens towards the deadline here. Because you got Bo Bichette, who is leading the team in RBIs. He's also been hitting really well. Do you trade him and see if there's something to get back, or do you risk losing him and hope that you do something in the playoffs with him?
He's one of your hitters, right? He's one of your offensive guys. And, you know, earlier on in the season, that's where you were struggling the most was offense. Do you give up an offensive guy for maybe a better defensive guy?
Yeah.
It's tough.
That's the key right there. You just said a better defensive player. So to me, if they're going to trade Bichette, they have to get an impact starting pitcher. That has to be part of the deal. Now, they're already talking about Milwaukee wanting to trade Peralta. And apparently the Jays are looking. They're very interested in picking him up. So maybe you could look at something like that. I'm not sure what the Brewers' shortstop situation is like. But what you said, Joe, about better defense, they could replace Bichette internally with a better defensive shortstop. But the offense is the key, right? Yeah. He's a big contributor to that team.
Yeah, the last thing you want to do is weaken your batting when it's only just now starting to pick up, and then, you know, weaken it, and then who knows what happens, right?
You could probably throw Jimenez from second base over at shortstop, and he'd be a better shortstop than Bo Bichette. Yep. No offense to Bichette, he's a good player, but his defense is not top-notch. Out of 32 teams, he's probably 30th best shortstop.
I mean, I'm not a huge baseball fan, but I know that that's what his strength is offense, right?
His weakness tends to be his arm, I think. It's the accuracy and power of his arm, where you get a guy like Barger, he's frozen rope from third base without even any effort at all. Yeah. It's just you watch him. I'm not going to lie to you, even now, if I see Bichette trying to throw like a ball kind of off balance or on the run, I'm like, where's this going to go? Holy smokes. Yeah. Please, thank God Vladdy's a good first baseman.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure if I remember reading that the Blue Jays had approached Bichette about switching positions based on like play second, and you know, they would have...
Clement.
Jimenez or Clement play, you know, shortstop.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to. He wants to stay a shortstop.
Well, too bad, buddy. We're paying you to do a job. We tell you what to do.
Technically,
there you go.
No, but technically that's true. I mean, the manager manages, right? And I mean, the manager is the one who decides, I want to switch you.
That's right. How about you play second or you sit on the bench?
Yeah.
Make a decision. Yeah. But I mean, there's also a lot of talk that he doesn't really want to be in Toronto.
Fair enough.
He's not from there. He didn't grow up there. You know, I think he grew up in the Colorado area, wherever his dad was playing.
I find that crazy though, for a player to have that mentality. Like, I didn't grow up here, so I don't want to play here. It's like, who cares, man? Make your name.
Yeah.
You know, go somewhere and play with pride and make you see there's little kids out there in the stands with your jersey on.
Yeah.
Because they look up to you, and you're gonna sit here and be like, I don't want to play here because I never grew up here.
Yeah.
You know,
now, I don't think that there's a question like he'll play hard until he makes that decision.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I don't think that's where he wants to be.
Yeah.
I think
that is a common problem in sports, period.
Yeah.
That a player will determine where they want to play because they didn't grow up somewhere. I mean, hey, it is a privilege to play where you grew up.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure, you know, John Tavares playing for the Leafs feels totally like he loves the fact that he got to play for the Leafs. Mitch Marner, probably the same thing. But, you know, in the end, like, you go where you're wanted, you know, and that's kind of the mentality of it all.
Now, if he doesn't re-sign with the Blue Jays in the offseason, if he goes to the Dodgers, I will never watch baseball again.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah,
the last thing we want is the Dodgers to win another one.
I'm a little worried about Kevin Gausman.
Yeah, he's been struggling this month. Man.
Yeah, he's not the same. He doesn't have the same stuff.
No.
He was perennially like known for being a strikeout pitcher, and his splitter was probably the best in baseball, or one of, and he can't get that thing in a good spot. I don't know. And then you got a guy like 42 or 49-year-old Max Scherzer, or however old he is, just, you know, in the minors, but he just had his last rehab, he had 8 strikeouts. So, and he's known as a strikeout pitcher, right?
Now, I'm not comparing minor league baseball to major league baseball, but, you know, I watched a few of the Nanaimo Night Owl games where it felt like pitching was their big weakness because their pitchers are throwing the balls all over the place. It's definitely one of those games where it's like in your head. It's all in your head, like the pressure of the game. So pitching has to be one of, if not the most stressful positions in all sports, you know?
Yeah.
It's all on you. And if you throw a perfectly clean fastball and that guy hits it out of the park, that's on you. If you throw a wild pitch that goes ball 4, it's on you. You know, like there's so much pressure.
Yeah.
It cannot be easy to be a pitcher.
No,
it just can't.
No, I don't know who would ever want to be a pitcher.
I know.
Well, you know, you look at a guy like Eric Lauer now, he's taking full advantage of his situation. You know, he's not pitching through 5 or 6 innings of the starts that he's getting, but he's playing quality ball. He was a former first round pick in 2016. And,
he picked by the Jays?
He was signed in December by the Jays, but I believe he was drafted by San Diego, if I remember correctly.
So he's one of the only left-handed starting pitchers that the Blue Jays have, or I guess they're classing him as a starting pitcher right now.
Yeah.
If people are wondering who the hell Eric Lauer is, they don't have a lot. I'd say this year they're actually a little bit better in the left-handed pitching position than they have been, and not just filling a spot with a left-hander, but having quality left-handed pitching. What is the young kid that's been? Is it Brendan Little? Is he left-handed?
Yes, he is.
I think it's Little.
Yeah. You're not thinking of Braden Fisher?
Maybe.
But I think Brendan Little is a lefty. So.
Yeah, if Fisher's not?
I don't think Fisher is.
Then it's Little that I'm thinking about. But he's a guy that basically has just been given an opportunity due to injury mostly.
Yeah.
And he's been pitching very, very well.
Yeah.
And he's also very young.
Cool.
So, and that's another thing that I will say the Jays do have coming is pitching prospects.
So they got some promising prospects.
Oh, yeah. Like the third best prospect in baseball is a Jays pitcher.
I remember, though, a time where we used to say that about Vladdy, right? He was the best prospect in baseball coming up. And then look where we are at.
Fair enough.
Now, that being said, I mean, you can say, you know, any team can say, well, we don't have as good of prospects coming up. And then those prospects can end up skyrocketing and being, you know, amazing players.
Well, they're making a difference. Like Eric Swanson just got assigned by the team or cut because he's allowed to elect for free agency at this point if he wants to.
Right.
He was a big component of the Teoscar deal a few years ago. Him and Adam Macko were the return for Teoscar. So they just basically cut him because, you know, he had an ERA of like 15-something. You know, and that's not going to keep you in the MLB, but you know, it's making the way that these prospects are playing are making guys like him expendable, because they're just that much better.
So guys, we got about a minute left. Let's talk one last thing about the Blue Jays and Major League Baseball before we wrap up the show.
Yeah. Looking at the Jays, like you had mentioned that Peralta was one of the acquisitions they're looking at. There's the possibility that they might have like a package deal of like Spencer Turnbull, Alek Manoah, who is on his way back, and Aurelvis Martinez, who is their third-ranked prospect. That would help, obviously, their starting pitching a ton. There was another major league trade that was a really big one. Rafael Devers from the Red Sox did get traded to the Giants.
Hmm.
Jordan Hicks, who is a former Blue Jay, was part of that package, as well as a bunch of prospects, which are James Tibbs, who is a prospect, and Jose Bello.
Nice.
Yeah, and Devers, I think, has been slowly pushed out by that organization, too, for whatever reason. I know that there was a couple of years ago, they publicly came out and said that he needs to lose weight.
Huh.
Like, what? He's one of your star players, man. Like, holy smokes. Maybe if you're going to have that conversation behind closed doors.
It's like, what do they call that? Negative
reinforcement.
Reinforcement, yeah. Negative reinforcement. Well, speaking of negative reinforcement, we're going to end the show now.
Sorry, guys.
Hopefully you guys enjoyed the episode. This was a fun one. We got a lot to talk about. I'm sure next episode we'll have a lot to talk about as well because there's so much going on right now in sports in general. But I just want to say thank you for watching. And if you guys have any comments, questions, suggestions, anything like that, make sure you reach out to us on our social media. We're available on Twitter. We're on Twitter, also known as X. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on anywhere you can get a podcast. And of course, you can also see us on Rogers TV. Thank you guys for watching the Puck and Pod. My name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
We'll see you guys in the next one.